The topic for this morning is communication in marriage. When I was assigned this topic a couple of months back, I had a couple of thoughts. The first was, I'm really not the one to be doing this. This is not something that I do very well. So I thought this would be better suited for someone else. Second thought was, I'm not really even sure how much of a biblical topic this is, but it really is once I started looking into it in an indirect sort of way. The Bible doesn't have a lot to say about communication in marriage directly, but it does have a lot to say about communication, the use of the tongue, relationships with others, and all those things are applicable to marriage. It talks a lot about how the tongue can be used for good or for evil. It can be used to build up or to tear down, to steer someone in the right direction or steer someone in the wrong direction. Communication is really the basis of forming relationships with anyone. And that's especially true with your spouse. This should be the deepest relationship you have. So communication with them should be the most meaningful. The Bible talks about the power of communication in several places. One was Proverbs 18:21, where it says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." Death and life. You can't read that without realizing what an important topic this is. Another verse is Ephesians 4, beginning in verse 25. It says, "Therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry and do not sin, and do not let the sun go down on your wrath." And then skipping down to verse 29, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you are sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you." This passage holds several of the keys to good communication and good relationships, and applies to marriage very well. Some of you may have heard of a man named Peter Drucker. He is known as the father of American management. And he has said that up to 60% of management problems are due to poor communication. And then you have people who are experts on marriage counselors, and they'll tell you that about half of all divorces really have their root in poor communication. So it's very important. I think we all sort of know what communication is. I won't go into that too much. It's simply the two-way sharing of information among two people or among many people. And the goal is to share that information and to be clearly understood. But there's a lot of opportunity to really mess that up. Communication experts say there are sort of six modes of communication. One is what you say, what you mean to say. And then there's what you actually say. And there's what the other person hears, and it's what they think they hear, and then what they say back to you, and then how you interpret that. So there's a lot of opportunity there to have miscommunication and misunderstandings. Communication sort of takes several different forms. First, there's the most obvious, that's just verbal communication. That's the words that you say, and that's what people normally think of when they hear communication. But another aspect is how you say it. That's what's known as a paraverbal communication. The same words can mean different things depending on how they're said. You can emphasize different words. Or you can have different inflections and tones of voice. And it can show your emotions and how you feel about that. And this can have a bigger impact than actually what you say. Let's look at a simple sentence. Okay, six words, real simple sentence. You wouldn't think that could be interpreted different ways, but it can depending on the word that's emphasized. Okay, here's the sentence. "I didn't say you were wrong." Okay, let's say it like this. "I didn't say you were wrong." That might mean, well, someone else did, but I didn't. How about, "I didn't say you were wrong"? You may have thought I did, but I really didn't. How about, "I didn't say you were wrong"? I may have thought it, but I didn't say it. Or, "I didn't say you were wrong." I may have said someone else is wrong. So same words, different meanings. Tone of voice can also communicate different things with the same sentence. About a simple request. Say, would you close that door? Okay, that's a polite request. And you're liable to get a polite response. Sure, I'll close it. Okay, you say the same words. Would you close that door? Okay, now it's an angry demand, and you'll get a completely different response to that. One, they may say, close it yourself. Or they may close it with such intensity, all the pictures fall off the wall. So, different response depending on how you say it. Proverbs 15, 1 and 2. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. So how you speak can be more important than actually what you say. Now, we start communicating even before we start talking, even when we're babies. 3 months old, babies can communicate. They will respond to a parent's voice. They'll look at you, they'll smile. If they're happy, they will, you know, they might coo, and they're communicating back to you. And they'll also cry, but they have different cries, don't they? They have the I'm fussy and time to go to sleep cry. Okay? And then they might have the I'm hungry, I want something to eat kind of cry. Well, then they've got the I'm hurt cry. And that's a different cry altogether. And every young mother out here recognizes that instantly and responds to it. If you're on the phone having a conversation and you hear that I'm hungry cry, you look for an opportunity to close out the conversation, say your goodbyes, and you go take care of it. But if you hear that I'm hurt cry, got to go, slam down the phone, and you run take care of it. So that young baby is communicating without words at a very young age. And then in addition to what you say and how you say it, there's also the nonverbal communication that you can have with your spouse. And this is a really powerful mode of communication. It can be positive. It can be things like, you know, smiling and nodding and making eye contact and really paying attention to what's being said. And then on the negative side, you can also have that nonverbal communication. We can have, you know, gestures of exasperation, things like that, that will throw people off. You can be glaring at someone. Have your jaw clenched while you're talking to them. You can be avoiding eye contact altogether. You can be showing just pure slack-jawed apathy, like you don't care what they're saying. All these things communicate messages. Now, anyone who has had a teenager or has been a teenager or knows people who are teenagers know about one particular gesture, and I think most of you are ahead of me. That's the eye roll. That's a big one. And I've seen that in other families, of course. But that provokes an instant response to me. I mean, my blood pressure will spike just like that. But that's a way of demonstrating just the power of a nonverbal communication without saying a word. It's like throwing gasoline on a fire. Other things you can do, you can be showing impatience, like you're ready to go do somewhere, looking at your watch, fidgeting, and things like this. And all these things send messages to your spouse. You know, this nonverbal communication can make what you think is a one-way conversation actually a two-way conversation. You know, I'm not a public speaker, and I don't really do well at that, and I'm not real comfortable doing it. But one thing that helps here is knowing that I'm going to be getting some feedback. I know I can look out here in the audience and see people doing these kind of things. They'll be nodding, and they'll be smiling, and they'll be looking and paying attention. Staying awake, things like that, that give you some good feedback, and that really helps. It helps you to relax. Now, nowhere is the nonverbal communication more important than when you're with your spouse. And that's because your spouse is really better than anyone at picking up on these things. Things that might not be noticed by other people will be noticed by them because they know you, known you for so long. You know, you might say something and there might just be a very slight glance or a pause or something like that. It may be very subtle, but you'll pick up on it and you'll know that didn't go over well. I shouldn't do that again. Okay, we talked about what you say, how you say it, nonverbal communication. And if you're being sincere and honest about what you say, all three of those will be sending the same message. But if you're not, then that will come through too, and you'll be sending different messages, and people will pick up on those. You ever seen one of those forced apologies? You have this with kids a lot. I know when I was a kid, I would occasionally fight with my brother, and usually what would happen, I would get in trouble, and then they would tell us, okay, tell him you're sorry, which is worse than a beating to me, having to tell your brother that you're sorry. Because usually we weren't sorry in the least. But we would stand there and we would say, sorry, while firing bullets at each other with our eyes, okay? The words were, I'm sorry. The message was, payback's coming. Just wait till Daddy's not around and you're going to get it. Now sometimes they would say, no, say it like you mean it. Well, then what do? You change the paraverbal, okay, how you say it. I'm sorry, you soften your voice a little bit, but you're still firing the laser beams with your eyes, see. So what you say, how you say it, very important. You can send entirely different messages. Let's talk about communication's impact on others, because it does have an impact, whether for good or for bad. On the positive side, it can build trust. If you're sincere and honest about what you do and say day in and day out, if you do what you say you'll do, if you show genuine concern, you're going to build trust over time. Good communication can also diffuse anger if someone's angry. We just read about the soft answer turning away wrath, but part of communication is listening, and sometimes you can diffuse anger just by listening. Let them talk it through. Don't argue, don't interrupt, don't be defending yourself. Just let them talk and say everything they want to say. After they get it all out, then you can go back and you can have a constructive conversation. Communication can also be used to show love for your spouse. And, you know, you don't have to get all sappy about it, but, you know, you need to show them that you do love them and do that in some way. You can do it just by showing consideration and concern for them. You know, we can show the characteristics of love that we see in 1 Corinthians 13. I read that, verses 4 through 8. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. Is not puffed up. Does not behave rudely. Does not seek its own. Is not provoked. Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Of course, communication used poorly can have a negative impact. It can discourage people. Job 19:2. How long will you torment my soul and break me in pieces with words? Think about Job's situation here for a minute. Job has lost all of his children. He has lost all of his property. He is in terrible physical pain and affliction, and yet what he says, how long will you torment my soul and break me in pieces with words? Poor communication can destroy relationships. Proverbs 18:19, a brother offended is harder to win than a strong city, and contentions are like the bars of a castle. It's much easier to damage a relationship than it is to fix it. It can also cause strife in the home, in the church, anywhere if used poorly. 2 Corinthians 12:20, for I fear lest when I come I shall not find you such as I wish, and that I shall be found by you such as you do not wish, lest there be contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, backbitings, whisperings, conceits, tumults. Insults or words can have a much stronger impact than what we realize. You know, we might say something deliberately to hurt someone, or it might just be a careless, offhand remark that we don't think anything about. But it can really hurt someone. If you're an adult, you can probably think back to when you were a child, something that someone had said that hurt your feelings that you still remember. I know I can. I can remember things back 40 years ago And there's people in here older than I that may be able to think back 60 or 70 years ago. So you can't say that words don't have impact, and don't have lasting impact. You heard sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But that is simply not true. Words do have impact. They do have long-lasting impact. One more passage on the power of tongue of the tongue before we move on. James 3, 1 through 12. Kind of a long passage. I'll give you a second to look that up. Our brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn the whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. Let's talk about the uses of communication. And it can be used really in as many different ways as you have motives to use it. First of all, just the most simple is just making a simple request. There's a good case study of this in Nehemiah. If you look in verse 2. You know, Nehemiah, if you remember, was a cupbearer for the king, and he heard about Jerusalem and the walls being torn down and the gates being burned, and it really upset him and distressed him. Let's read Nehemiah 2, starting at 1. We're going to go through verse 8. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. And I had never been sad in his presence before. Therefore the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, since you are not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of heart." Let's stop right there for just a second. First thing I want you to notice, we talked about the nonverbal communication. Well, there it was. Nehemiah, without saying anything, was communicating that he was sad. The king, being a pretty perceptive guy, picked up on this, or the rest of it would have never happened. All right, let's continue reading. "So I became dreadfully afraid and said to the king, 'May the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the places of my father's tombs, lies waste and its gates are burned with fire?' So the king said to me, 'What do you request?' So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, 'If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it.' Then the king said to me, the queen also sitting beside him, 'How long will your journey be, and when will you return?' So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Furthermore, I said to the king, 'If it pleases the king, let letters be given to me for the governors of the region beyond the river, that they must permit me to pass through till I come to Judah, and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he must give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel, which pertains to the temple, and for the city wall, and for the house that I will occupy. And the king granted to me according to the good hand of God upon me.'" Well, the result of this request were the walls being rebuilt. Two lessons. Pay attention to the nonverbal cues from your spouse or from anyone else, and don't be afraid just to make a simple request of it. Secondly, you can use it to communicate to your spouse your preferences, your likes and your dislikes. You know, no matter how compatible you are, you're not going to like all the same things. And it's a mistake to assume that because you like something, they're going to like it also. You need to know what their goals are, what they want to accomplish in life. You know, one advantage of marrying a Christian is your main goal should be the same thing, but there are all sorts of other goals that you need to know about. You need to know also, you know, how do they like to spend their free time? What kind of movies or books or food and all these things, thousands of other things, do they like? I read a story about a man and his wife that had been married for 50 years. The morning of their 50th anniversary, they got up and they were going to have breakfast. They were just going to have a light breakfast because they had an anniversary dinner planned for that night. And they were just going to have some toast and some coffee. Well, the man got out the toaster and put a couple of pieces of bread in it. When it popped up, he took the end piece of bread and put it on his wife's plate. He put the next piece on his plate. At this point, his wife just exploded. She went into a tirade. She said, for 50 years, you've been giving me the end piece of bread. You would think after 50 years of marriage, you would show me a little more respect than to give me this piece of bread. Well, he looked at her and he said, well, that's my favorite piece. So for 50 years, he thought he had been generous in offering her what he thought was the best. She had been building up resentment all this time, thinking that he was just throwing her the scraps just because she didn't speak up. Let him know, I don't like that. I guess early on she didn't want to appear to be picky or disagreeable, so she just let it go and let it go for 50 years. Good communication can also promote unity and harmony in a marriage. A successful marriage is all about having unity. Mark 10:9 said, what therefore God hath joined together, let no man put asunder. God joined us together. He made us one. He expects unity in a marriage just like he expects it in the church. And becoming one is the very definition of unity. And some of the things I'm talking about when I talk about unity in a marriage is having sort of the same purpose, having the same standards, the same goals, the same philosophy of raising children, and lots of other things. 1 Corinthians 1:10. It's talking about here about unity in the church, really. But if you read it, it's very applicable to marriages also. Now, I plead with you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all speak the same thing, and there be no divisions among you, that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. And also in Philippians 2, 1 through 5, this is a passage we've been studying in our Wednesday night class. Therefore, if there is any consolation in Christ, if any comfort of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and mercy, fulfill my joy by being like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. We're told here that we are to be of one mind and of one accord. Another way you can use this communication is for encouragement. This is one of the great benefits of being married, I think. When one of you is down, then the other one can pick them back up. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 and 10. Two are better than one, but because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls. And then 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Therefore comfort each other and edify one another, just as you are also doing. So look for those clues, those cues, the nonverbal cues from your spouse that they need some encouragement and pick them up. And it works both ways. And that's a great benefit of marriage. Next one's a little bit more delicate and takes a little more tact. But there may be situations where you require some chastisement or correction. This may be about some little things. It may be things as simple as you're eating too much or you're not keeping the grass cut. But it can also be about big things. It can be about sin, and it can be about things that can jeopardize your soul. And those things need to be brought out. You know, if you've cultivated the relationship you should with your spouse, you ought to be able to listen to them when they tell you these things and correct what they're telling you. Proverbs 25 talks about chastisement actually being a blessing. verses 11 and 12. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and settings of silver, like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, is a wise rebuker to an obedient ear. So that's saying we should be thankful if our spouse corrects us, and we should listen to them. If it's important enough for them to bring it up, it's important enough for us to listen and try to make a correction. The other key phrase in that verse is fitly spoken. It says a word fitly spoken. So if it has to be done, you need to do it in a spirit of love and a concern, not a spirit of belittling them or berating them. Another area where communication is very important is in the raising of children. Consistency is really important in the raising of children, and good communication is the only way you can really be consistent. Before they're even born, you need to agree on the standards that you're going to use to raise them. You need to communicate to them the same expectations, the same level of freedom that they're going to be allowed, the discipline that will be administered for misconduct. If you don't, the children will pick up on that and quickly take advantage of it. They're smart, and they're perceptive, and they'll realize, you know, who's going to let them do something when the other one might not. You know, who's going to be more lenient about punishment? Who's going to let the discipline slide, and who's going to enforce it? I can clearly remember when I was a kid asking my mother if I could do something, and she told me no. So I waited there for a little bit, and I went and I asked my daddy the same question. And he said, sure, go ahead. So I had beat the system for about an hour until they talked to each other. And then I not only didn't get to do what I wanted to do, I had a memorable whipping to go with it. So you've got to communicate those kind of things. Communication is also essential in accomplishing common goals. When more than one person is working on a common goal, you have to have good communication. This is true at work, project teams, things like that. The project teams that are successful are the ones who have good communication. They all need to be agreed on what you're trying to accomplish. You know, what's your plan for doing it? Who's going to do what parts of it? You know, how are we doing? Are we making progress toward the goals that we're doing? All that's important. If they don't, things aren't going to go well for you. There's a good example of that in the Bible back in Genesis 11, where people were trying to accomplish a common goal, but it wasn't a goal that God wanted them to do, and that was the Tower of Babel. Look at Genesis 11, 1 through 9. Now the whole earth had one language and one speech, and it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They had brick for stone, they had asphalt for mortar, and they said, come, let us build ourselves a city, a tower whose top is in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and tower which the sons of men had built, and the Lord said, indeed, the people are one, and they all have the same language, and this is what they begin to do. And now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go, and therefore confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore its name is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the earth. Here we have people who are trying to accomplish something that God didn't want them to accomplish. Now, he could have sent a lightning bolt and just turned the tower into dust. He could have sent a flood and just washed every trace of it away. He didn't choose to do that. He simply took away the people's ability to communicate, and it stopped it right there. The people still knew what they were trying to build. They still knew how to carve stone and make bricks and mix mortar and do carpentry work, but they couldn't communicate, and it stopped it. There are also a number of barriers to communication, things that get in the way of it. One thing Bob talked about in his lecture series is the fact that men and women think differently, communicate differently. I'm not going to go into this in a lot of detail because of the time, but men and women do look at things differently. In general, these are generalities, men tend to look at everything as a problem to be solved, and they need a plan, a strategy, a schedule even, some way to attack the problem. Women are more likely to talk through the problem and talk about all the different aspects of the problem. And to the men, it may seem like they're not working toward a solution, but they really are. They both arrive at the same place, but they get there by different routes. While the man's down in his cave by himself trying to figure out solutions to the problem, the women may be up there thinking, well, he's ignoring me, he doesn't want to talk to me, those kind of things. He's mad at me, something like that. On the other hand, while the women are trying to talk through the problems, the man may be thinking, well, why is she just talking instead of coming up with an answer? We just need to recognize the differences in thinking and try to understand and put ourselves in their shoes and think about their way of thinking. Other barriers, mistrust. If there's no trust, you're not going to communicate well. Dishonesty. This is one of those things that leads to mistrust. It's one of those things that takes, you know, 1,000 truths won't overcome one lie in developing trust. It's got to be practiced 100% of the time. Colossians 3:9, do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deeds. Now, let me go off on a little sidetrack for a second on talking about honesty. You hear sometimes people will say these very negative and hurtful things, and if they get called on it, they'll say, hey, I'm just being honest, right? What I said was true. Honesty is a good thing. I'm the good guy, right? No, you're not. Think about the motive you have for saying what you say. If it's not something that's helpful or uplifting or necessary, it's best to just keep it to yourself. Just because something's true doesn't always mean that it has to be said. And if it's negative, most of the time, it's better left unsaid. Proverbs 17:27. He who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit. And then Proverbs 29:20. Do you see a man who speaks in haste? There is more hope for a fool than him. Some of the other things that get in the way of good communication are attacking or criticizing the other person, condescending attitude toward the other person, showing power, trying to order them around, throw your weight around, name-calling, shouting, or just silence, not communicating at all. All these things get in the way. The nonverbal communication, the negative nonverbals I talked about, all that prevents good communication, and then just simply not listening. All right? Well, how do you get good communication? How do you do that? Everybody wants to do it, but how do you do it? First of all, you have to want to do it. Good communication skills don't come naturally. It's a skill that can be improved and honed, but it's an active process. It's something you have to work at, which means you have to want it. It's got to be important, or you're not going to work at it, and you're not going to improve it. I haven't played golf in probably 15 or 20 years. I used to play a little just because my friends would ask me to go, and I'd go, and I didn't really care anything about it. I was pretty apathetic. I didn't keep score half the time, and naturally, I was never any good at it and finally gave it up altogether. But the people that really got into it got good at it. But what did they do? They learned the skills. They would take lessons, they would read golf magazines, they would look at instructional videos. I guess today they would look at the Golf Channel, things like that. They'd go to the driving range, they'd play a lot, they'd look and see what works for them, what doesn't work for them. That's how they got better. That's the same way you get better at communication. You have to want to do it, you have to learn the skills, and you have to practice them a lot. It takes time, and it takes effort. Then you have to try to really understand your partner, your spouse. 1 Peter 3:7, husbands likewise dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as a weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Many of you may have read Stephen Covey's book back several years ago, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and this was one of the practices in that book, and that is to seek to understand the other one before we try to be understood. We often get that backwards. We want to make our point first. We convince ourselves that once the other person has heard the pearls of wisdom that come out of our mouths, then they're going to have to agree with us. But it just doesn't work that way. We need to try to understand them. We need to show that we're really concerned about their ideas. And that'll go a long way toward helping to understand them. Now, we don't necessarily have to agree with them, but we need to understand them. It shows respect for them. It tells them you think they have something worth hearing. And when that happens, they're more likely to listen to you, and you can establish much better communication. The biggest part of trying to understand the other person is just really listening, active listening. It's not passive. It requires some concentration and energy, and it requires that we put aside our thoughts and thinking about what we're going to say and listen and be focused on what they say. Sometimes we'll put conversations into two parts, break it into two parts. It'll be us talking and then preparing a rebuttal. We'll say what we have to say, and we'll hear just enough of what they're saying to kind of see where they're going, and then we're starting to think of what our argument's going to be for that. And you don't even hear the rest of it. You've got to put that aside and really focus on what they're saying. Proverbs 18:2, a fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing his own heart. And then Proverbs 18:13, he who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. Another thing is, just because you talk a lot does not make you a good communicator. There are people that you can talk to, and then there are people that you can only listen to. But it doesn't matter how eloquent they are or how dynamic they are. If they're not a good listener, they're not a good communicator. Inevitably, in any marriage, you're going to have some disagreements. Communication is the only way that you're going to resolve those disagreements. And the process I want to call constructive disagreement. Several things to keep in mind when having an argument or a disagreement. To keep it from getting out of hand and to turn it into a positive experience. One, remember that actions speak louder than words. Nonverbal is just as powerful, if not more powerful, and the verbal communication. Define what's important. If you're discussing a particular point, stay on that point. Don't try to solve every issue at once, and don't get sidetracked, or you'll never get to an answer. Avoid finding fault with the other and making accusations. Show respect for the other person. You need to avoid statements like, "You never do this," or "You always do that." No one ever, never does anything or always does anything. Those are just inflammatory statements and they won't get you anywhere. Avoid exaggerating what the other person may have done. You need to recognize that there are different points of view. And that point of view depends on each person's experiences and their situation. And we need to recognize that and try to understand that. You need to avoid ridiculing the other person or name-calling, sarcastic responses, things like that. We need to try to understand why the other person feels the way they do. Try to put yourself in their shoes and hear what they have to say. We need to always be tactful, be considerate of the other person, and be courteous. Even in the midst of an argument, we need to ask questions, and then we need to listen completely and carefully. And then don't make up excuses. If you've done something wrong, just own up to it. Don't make an excuse and resolve to do it better. In conclusion, marriages, they can be strengthened by good communication, and they can be totally destroyed by bad communication or no communication. Communication helps you to grow closer. It helps you improve your marriage. It helps you to solve your problems. It helps you to accomplish your goals and raise your children. Main takeaways I'd like for you to get from the lesson. One, listen more than you talk. Focus on trying to understand the other person. Try to understand the other person's point of view. Be constructive in all your communication. Don't participate in destructive behavior. Be careful in what you say, but also how you say it, and in the nonverbal communication that you're communicating. And then work at it. Work to get better. Learn the skills, practice them, and get better over time. One final verse, Colossians 4:6. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each other. Thank you for your time.